So we're going to try and ask people if they saw, if they wanted to come up closer, but it's whatever. It's all good. Just want to say thanks very much to everyone for coming. It's really good to see a nice turnout of people, old friends and hopefully some new friends as well. In a glorious building like this, with the statue of James Connolly in the background, it's fantastic to be here. And we really have to say thanks to SIPTU for giving us this for the evening. People's generosity has been remarkable, really, towards the book and towards the event, so it's really good. I'm Niall. I put the book together with Michael Murphy there. So we've got, as you see in the book, 105 contributors, and it's been fantastic, the response so far. And we're going to get John from the Red Cross is going to say a few words. Dara's going to read his piece from the book. And Barry McCormick and Pete Hall, they're going to play a song. And just enjoy the evening. Michael, do you want to? No. Just really thanks very much to everybody for all they did and the food and the spread. It's really wonderful. So thank you. John, maybe.
Thanks very much, Niall and Michael. It's a great pleasure on behalf of the Irish Red Cross that I'm here today to kick off proceedings here. It's nice to actually be at the start. A gig I did not so recently was with some graduate students, and they did a gig for Syria, and they had some bands, and they had but they had me on the end of the night, and you can imagine what audience I was talking to. What I'm just going to talk about a little bit is to put the context. Syria. We've seen Syria, Aleppo, the words, we hear refugees. But let's start. Syria was a country. Syria was a place rich in art, rich with literature. It's famous for its music in the Middle East. It's famous for intercultural exchanges. It was a country, a very beautiful country. Some of it looks even like Ireland. Famous food. Let's put that picture in our head before the horrors we witnessed on our TV, through the social media, or in the media over the last 5 to 6 years. To put in context what's happening in Syria today, unfortunately, the war has created many problems. One of the big problems is displacement of people. There are nearly 4.8 million people displaced, or what we call refugees, out of Syria. That's nearly the whole population of Ireland. There is, people on the move. We've already received some of these people coming in, and it's touched their doorstep. And we've seen what you've witnessed over the last year also on the media, that, the biggest movement of people since World War II. There is, just to give you some stats, there is we talk of 4.8 million. There is one in four persons in Lebanon today, because Lebanon hosts quite a large amount of these people from fleeing the war in Syria. That's one in four persons. Every one in four you meet on the street is probably a Syrian refugee. You have nearly 3 million living in Turkey, and you have nearly between 1 to 1.5 million in Jordan. And why I say 1 to 1.5? Because you have to understand, Syrians don't want to be on the move. They want to live in their country. And what happens in Jordan is they live along the camps, along the border, and from time to time they move back in and out so that they, when there are tranquil periods, not under bombing. There is 6.3 million people internally displaced within Syria. We see the bombings, the Aleppos, the cities. People flee for a safe place within their own country. But yet, their medical services, 60% of their medical services are down. And we see the horror, where actually they bomb hospitals, they bomb people have died who are out driving ambulances to help people who are caught up in this conflict. 5 million people live in besieged cities. That means they can't move anywhere. And food can't get in. Services can't get in, and from time to time the electricity is cut off and water is cut off. I know I don't want to spoil the evening, but we have to put these things in context. This is probably one of the most brutal wars we've seen in the last 15 years, and it is only 15 years. And I don't want to talk about Yemen, I don't want to talk about other places, the Congo, but I guess we can relate, because this is what happens in the big urban centres, and that's why you have such large numbers of people leaving. Let me just say, it's really great what's been done here, and buying the book, and every little bit helps. You know, the Red Cross has been assisting more than 8 million people last year, providing food, water, help. The Syrian Arab Red Crescent feeds a Dublin a day, or a month. Every month they feed the population of Dublin. So we're talking, these are big, but your contribution will help. The Irish Red Cross, we've had an appeal for the last 4 or 5 years. We contribute, we're part of a big international Red Cross network, and the money, we've wisely spent the money in these operations towards winterization kits, both for people fleeing, living on the border countries, both in Lebanon and in Jordan. We have bought food parcels, and just recently, we made, just before Christmas, we have bought an ambulance which goes between the cross lines and helps for the Syrian Red Crescent to transport people who are caught up in this. There are something like 250,000 wounded per month in this context. So to end on a good note, just to say your contribution, I can assure you, definitely will go for the right cause. It will help people that are really facing a very difficult situation, and unfortunately, I don't think there is a light at the end of the tunnel that it will change within the coming years. So thank you for giving me this opportunity to explain, and please really enjoy the rest of the night.
Thank you very much, Paul. Thank you to everyone who came. Thank you to everyone who wrote pieces for our book. Niall and myself, we really were chancing our arms. We're not book publishers. We're old punk rockers. And we're from the DIY community. We're from that idea that if something isn't happening, well, maybe it's your fault. So we were chancing our arms, and we emailed a bunch of people, some of whom we knew, some of whom we absolutely had never, ever met or had any contact with. And we really were overwhelmed with the generosity of people who wrote, not just about their favourite gigs, but wrote for this incredibly important cause at this moment in history. So thank you to all of the contributors. There was a huge diversity of people who wrote and the types of gigs that were covered. But we've asked Darren McCarthy, the filmmaker, and old member of the DIY scene. When I say old, it's because we're from the old school, but it was a very cool school. So we're from the cool school. And Darren's going to read one of the many brilliant pieces. We were staggered by just the literary quality of people remembering these gigs that they've been to. So here's Darren McCarthy to read his excerpt from the book. Thank you.
Peter Jones has just informed me that I'm dead wrong about one of the facts in the middle of this, so but that's all right, that's memory for you, I guess. In Northside Dublin of the early 80s, when music was still tribal and important, there was a sense that your tribe chose you and not the reverse. My tribe were those slack-jawed long-hairs that followed barefoot convent girls around St. Anne's Park on a Saturday afternoon before the Grove Disco on Civil Hill Road. The barefoot ones were always from Merrifield on tree-lined Griffith Avenue. And it was through their older brothers' record collections that I first got my musical education. Lizzie, Gallagher, Led Zeppelin, Hawkwind, and so forth. Weekday evening efforts to avoid Irish homework entailed an hour or so listening to Pat James and the Pirate Radio Dublin. He played demos by DC9, a band called The Frames, The Models, and singles by U2, Theatrix, Tony, Monet, Coughlin, and New Wave Internationals. I remember occasionally he played tracks by The Virgin Prunes, who I knew were connected to U2 through something mysterious and fascinating called Lipton Village. When Tracks by the Prunes came on, I invariably headed to the kitchen to put the kettle on, mostly avoiding the mind-scraping, painful noise they made. They were too punk for me. They had a sound which made me, by no accident, deeply uncomfortable, until in a moment of epiphany, I realised that those strange, scary fuckers from Glasnevin were all just rabid Boland and Bowie fans. The music all made a sudden sense. I was sold, and I bought into the mystery, full tilt. They were now the coolest and most interesting band on the planet, and sat perfectly with the Velvets, Patti Smith Group, Peter Gabriel and Lou Reed records in the corner. Even though they were part of the same strange Lipton Village gang, and The Edge and Dick Prune were brothers, there was a real sense of the bands being the antithesis of each other, and a palpable sense of light and dark, good versus evil, Beatles versus Stones. I later heard that at some point a section of the more committed U2 fans verbally attacked Gavin Friday, accusing him in a serious way of playing the devil's music while U2 played God's. They were boys that wore dresses and carried pig's head around the place in sacks, mythically. They couldn't possibly have come out of Ireland, but genuinely could only have emerged from Dublin. When I finally got to see them in 1983 at the SFX, a theatre owned by the Jesuits, it was at the end of a tour promoting If I Die, I Die, their first official album on Rough Trade, and I had the feeling I might have missed all the legendary performances. The support in the night, if there was one, might and indeed wasn't a Japanese duo called Frank Chickens, as Peter Jones informed me. The crowd were the likes of which just don't exist anymore, whatever the youth are doing. Furthermore, all thoughts of barefoot star children evaporated forever when a young one walked by with Pagan printed on the back of her leather jacket. On stage, there was a tall standard lamp, an occasional table, and Dick on guitar sitting down on a wooden chair, all long hair like Cousin It. Googie in totter heels, a pencil skirt, bleach blonde, big hair, smoking cigarettes like a streetwalker. Gavin came on like a Brechtian fishwife. 10-hole Doc Martens appearing occasionally from under his heavy velvet ankle-length dress. A real physically intimidating cross-dresser. A light heavyweight in a maxi dress. They all had long hair, as far as I can recall, which really emphasised their punk rock credentials even more. This was the coolest, smartest thing I'd ever seen. The previous year I had been bored in the hill and slain by the Rolling Stones. I think they opened with Theme for Thought, with the ponderous bass line from Strongman. They certainly didn't hit the stage with an upbeat number for the kids. It felt like maybe it was we who were under scrutiny and had to impress them. Brilliant. The one song I clearly remember was Ballad of the Man by David Bozaris, who ambled on stage halfway through the night to say in a drawn-out voice, half innocent, "There are good people here, there are bad people here," which struck me as the most confrontational thing ever put up to me at a concert. Then the lyrics. "Came in from the underworld last night, looking for a bank to rob, bank. He said, 'Do you want to join my gang?' I said, 'You must be joking.'" He was a twisted Springsteen, of all things. I clearly remember the point where Gavin Friday loomed over the bird-like frame of Googie, possibly during Baby Turns Blue, and throttled him with a scarf like a lover. "It was an accident. I didn't mean it." This was a pretty great concert and an amazing experience. And when the next day at 5 o'clock over the Artane dinner table, the Evening Herald or whatnot was brandished at me with chalk headline and photos, "Transvestite simulates strangulation on stage," I figured I'd done my bit for Teenage Rebellion, and at least annoying the folks. And she had Pagan written on the back of her jacket.
Yo-yo here. Thanks, Sarah. Won't be too much longer, folks. Just, we're going to have two singers now. Both people wrote pieces for the book, and they're both still playing music. We've got Barney McCormick, whose new album is just out, and Pete Holiday, who's in the Troubled Pilgrims now. So, again, thank you very much. Like, sincerely, thank you. Thank you to everybody who's done something. We're just standing here on stage. The book belongs to the people who wrote it, and we're just chancing our arm. All right, thanks very much.
What am I live? I'm live. I'm going to do a song about a guy who he's saying he doesn't want to go into an early house, and I was trying to connect this to the book somehow, and then I remembered that I think the first gig I ever went to, I was about 15, it was Green Day in the attic, and I was thrown out of it after about two songs. But someone told me it was rubbish. Gary Fitzpatrick said it was rubbish. Anyway. And I think the second gig I went to was, I tried to go to a gig in Barnstormers. It was a punk rock gig. I don't know who was playing. And I ended up in Slattery's on Capel Street, the wrong place. Smiley Bulger was on the door. I said, this isn't the punk rock gig. And as it turns out, Slattery's and the White Horse, they're both early houses. So maybe somewhere in my subconscious, this is where this song came from. I'm not going to the early house, you know I just can't take it anymore. All the spit and the sawdust and the broken teeth and the bloody mess on the floor. I'm not going to the early house, into the arena of the ungodly and the shook. It all starts out with the badinage and ends up in a Donnybrook. Sunrise over Yadam, me boys, dry land disappearing from view, and all the things you've done will be waiting there for you. I'm not going to the early house, I've seen the souls who wind up there. Houdini Specs and Shell Shock Joe with the thousand pint of porter stares. All sorrows are less with bread, booze and a sleeper are two, and all the things you've done will be waiting there for you. All away. Back to that weird pool room where they would tear you limb from limb. It's nothing personal, buddy, they'll say, as they beat you black and then blue, and all the things you've done will be waiting there for you. All away. Guitar, the electrics started working, so I borrowed a guitar from a friend of mine. Got here, the electrics aren't working. So we had to mic this up old school. This is like at the Embankment in 1974. Not as much smoke in the air. Okay, I'm just going to do one more. This is a song. It's about a bloke who drives a bus, but he's autodidactic, and he's interested in geology. And I had to harass a Trinity geology professor to find out if shale was beneath the streets of Dublin, because igneous and basalt are really difficult to rhyme with. So fortunately, we do have shale beneath the streets. It goes like this. Drive the number 9 out to Charlestown. I've seen it all and somehow lifted till the tail.
I know every hillock, bump and pothole, when the rock beneath us turns from schist to shale. Down along these ancient trackways, through the sweat and the vomit, brimming amongst the stones. Some people hate it, they can't wait to leave. Others, they love it, it's in their blood, in their bones. And all the filth and all the begrudgery will all be a memory when you're a long way away. When you're a long way away. Back and forth we go like a force in nature, like the changing of the seasons, the tilt of the earth. On Monday morning there's the grim commute, on Friday evening the ritual chasing of the skirts, and all the wanton piggery will all be a memory when you're a long way away. When you're a long way. It's murder down in the northbound bore, along the quays and up on the shore. Any moment now, it will be all out war to the song of the drunken stevedore. Returning now from the valley, they've all had a go on the stone of destiny. For most it whimpers, for some it might roar, but they've all been touched a little by its mystery. And all its spooky majesty will all be a memory when you're a long way away. When you're a long way.
Thank you very much. Hello there. I was delighted to contribute a article to the book when I saw the Alice Cooper band, believe it or not, the original band in London when I was a teenager, supported by Roxy Music the first week of the week of their first album. And I can just tell you now, it was an experience that included chopping babies up and people getting hung, so it was pretty good. Considering where we are, I just thought there's two songs from a vast repertoire that would be appropriate to do. This is the first one. This is a love song written by Philip Chevron, and it won Philip an Ivor Novello Award, and it sold 5 million copies worldwide, which is, of course, is the alternate facts. Okay. Berkey at night, in this dark and stinking place, urges I can't fight, with a boy without a face. Strange as it seems, all I want is to embrace by the streetlights,
just like other lovers do without disgrace. The Cleary's come to my head and I want to wait. Oh God, he's late. He stood me up. Next bus to Anlar, it's his for sure. 10 minutes more and it will bring my love to me. The love that does not have a name. Lonely nights, just imagining his face. Only in dreams do I kiss him and embrace. Cold morning lights, he is gone with only shame to take his place. The Cleary's clock tonight, and I want to wait. Oh God, he's late. He stood me up. Next bus to Anlar, it is for sure. 10 minutes more, and it will bring my love to me. The love that does not have a name. On the Cleary's clock tonight, and I'm gonna wait. Oh God, he's late. He stood me up. Bus to Anlar, it's his for sure. 10 minutes more, and it will bring my love to me. The love that does not have a name.
It's the most beautiful love song ever written. Philip Shepherd, we love you. Called An Organic Rose. It's another Dublin song.
When the shadows cover ghost town from the moon's reflected light, the creature's constant howling echoes through the night. The razor hats of scavenging for dollars after dime. The weekend suits for dancing. The red yolk is for crowns. We're animals.
Anyone go wahoo?
Wahoo. We're animals. Wahoo.
It's only one chord, so you know. On that dark alleyway on the way home, you know something's down there.
From Thornley Street to Summerhill and up to Patrick's Club, the north side and the south side gangs are loading up their gloves. The Liberty's dark alleys are carved with red array. The tenements are turning out for the straightening day. You're animals.
Bollocks.
Oh, wahoo. You're animals. Oh, wahoo.
Now I'm going to bend down, pick my petrol up and do the solo. Is that okay? If you don't like it, I'll fucking stab you. Here we go, here's the solo. Maybe not.
Emerging from the shadows with a crafted serenade, pinchy coat concealing a sharp and patchy blade. Where you can smell the piss and poverty, to driving the despair. But when Brando watches over them, no weapons to declare, we're animals. Wahoo, you're animals. Wahoo, here we go. You're animals. You're animals. Hey, go, train, cattle.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
To Barry McCormick and to Pete Holliday. The entertainment is over. I might as well be honest. The entertainment, but the fun isn't. Can we have a round of applause for Brian on the sound, because he was stellar. It's lovely to see all of you. Some of you I've never met before. Some of you have bought your records. You've changed my life. It's particularly gratifying to be standing on stage after Pete Holliday, because
you better believe it.
The Radiators from Space changed my life. They opened up so many possibilities for me. But I'm standing on stage and he's down there, so I'm headlining. So I won. But thank you to everyone for coming. Thank you for buying the book, for reading it, for writing for it, and have a great night. And thank you.
Go ahead, just
straight in.
So where did it
start? Started with myself and Michael having a conversation, going, oh, isn't this awful what's going on in Syria? People falling off ships in the Mediterranean, and geez, we need to try and do something. So that's kind of how it started. And we said, we'd write to a few punks and do a fanzine. And then it kind of split into two different groups. There was
Not
a lot
too
of.
Big, did it?
Well, yeah, there was two very distinct groups of people writing back, you know. There was people involved in the Irish music kind of community, and then there was people in the more in the punk rock community.
Yeah.
So we said we'll do two different things. So the punk one kind of came out as a fanzine. There was about 70 people wrote for that. And then this became a book.
And is the two merged together now? Or
no, there's a couple of the Irish people that were in the fanzine are in the book, but it's mostly two separate things.
What's the strangest one you got back?
I don't know. Strange. We got a few U2 ones, which was a bit bizarre.
Yeah.
Because I never ever thought I'd be involved in something that would
put
any kind of focus on U2. But you know. If people want to write about it, they want to write about it. So.
And was there anyone notable who never got back to you, or is that?
I don't know. Well, I can't really remember, to be honest, Donald. Yeah. But most people got back and did something. A few people got back and said they would, and just didn't meet the deadline, because we had to set a deadline at one stage. But most people were really positive about it. So there was no one kind of going, "Oh, I wouldn't support that."
Yeah, I have the book myself. Did you write an article?
No,
and I haven't read it.
No, I didn't write anything for it on purpose.
What would you go for yourself then? If you were
I
going
don't
to
know.
Be
I suppose
the next book, the volume 2.
Yeah, I suppose I'd probably go for Jealously Fugazi and the SFX, because we put a gig on the SFX. That was pretty good. But I probably would have the X in the Fox and Pheasant, which a couple of people picked. I'd probably go with that one. But I don't know.
Yeah.
It'll change tomorrow if you ask me tomorrow.
Wasn't that the X? It was probably at the 2000.
Right, yeah.
I'd probably go SLF myself.
Very
Olympic
good.
Olympic Ballroom 87.
Oh, yeah.
Perform for the Gopher again. It's a very interesting book. I had a flick through it.
Yeah.
One of those books, I don't think you're going to read it from one end to the other. It's going to be kind of a coffee table. You pick
it up. Yeah, you flick through it and you go, you pick a gig and you go, there's Swerve Driver that Barry McCormick wrote about. And you go, do you remember them? It's that kind of thing. But it's also people start saying what their favourite gig would have been.
So do you think there's more life in the project after, say, this book sells out, which it most likely will, right?
So who knows?
Yeah. So say after that, could it turn into something like the Where Were You book, where it has a more online life, where people can contribute ongoingly to my favourite gig was Laugh or whatever?
Yeah,
reason, you know?
I suppose. Yeah, it certainly could. Yeah. We haven't really thought about it. Do you know, in the whole kind of DIY thing, so we wrote to the people, we collated the responses, we reminded the people, we typed it all out, we went to the printer, we got the books back, we're trying to get them, we've done the launch, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I haven't really thought, like we prepared the food even for the launch, so you know.
And in the spirit of DIY, maybe hand it over to them to continue it and they take it on.
That would be nice. Aidan Walsh, Aidan Walsh, have a word here, Aidan.
Hi Niall, keep up the good work. I know we get the King of Rock and Roll, over and out.
You could never forget Aidan Walsh.
Can I rob Michael and Niall for 1 minute?
Thanks Donald.
It's a live broadcast.
Yeah, I know. There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, see, Aidan, that was Aidan Walsh, the master of the universe. It's Radioactive International Broadcasting from the... If you get Michael or, anyone, pass them on over to me.
Hey, this is Donald.
How are you doing? Take a seat. How are you doing?
Okay,
we're live on Radioactive International. We're on the internet streaming.
Oh yeah,
we're in the world.
Yeah.
We're also going to record this for podcast, so we can listen back later. Forevermore to be archived.
Yeah.
So you wrote a piece for the book yourself.
I did. Yeah.
And what did you go for?
It was about the Clash playing in Trinity College Dublin in 1978. That was while I was there as an undergraduate.
You were there as a student?
Yeah.
And was it a freshers' ball or a Trinity ball? Or
it was just a concert. It was just a concert. Because I think I remember at the time, the Students' Union wanted to use the exam hall as a music venue. And there was a big argument with the university authorities, the governors or whatever. And then they relented and allowed it to be used. And I think there were a few concerts there. But I think after that, then he decided, no, we don't want any more.
That's the end.
Yeah.
Was that just before the Buttery and places like venues like that?
Oh, the Buttery was there at the time. Yeah. So the Buttery was for kind of very small.
So this was a bigger venue.
Yeah.
So 2,000 people maybe in Trinity? Or
must be, yeah, because it's a very big hall with a very high ceiling. And
how did it go? Was it?
It was weird. Yeah, they did. Yeah. I can't seem to remember. Maybe it was another one. I can't remember who they were. I wouldn't like to say now exactly because I'd probably be wrong who it was. But no, I can't remember.
Do you remember any other bands on the night who supported?
No. I only remember seeing the Clash. They made a big impression on me because there weren't too many people there, despite the fact that the hall is very big, and yet there were not a huge number of people. You'd think it might be crowded out, but it wasn't. You know, I could go right up to the top, and I was standing literally just a few feet away from Joe Strummer. He was really belting it out, you know. I felt I was really, really close to them.
And would that have been their first Irish gig?
I'm sure they would have been there before. No, I don't think so. This is they've been going for a few years. I'm sure they would have been here before, but I would have to check.
They had a few aborted attempts to play Belfast.
Oh,
and the Troubles at the time. They couldn't. Maybe on the way back they
possibly
probably didn't fly in those days. On the way back via Dublin, maybe on Hollywood.
Yeah,
They stuck into Dublin for a gig.
So
any other gigs over time that really got you? Or was it a hard one to pick, or was it?
It just came into me just like that. It was just a random, because there are other gigs I could have written about, but I suppose they were the most famous. One of the most famous.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the Jam in Dunleary, the Top Hat. I remember going out there with a lot of people to see them, and they were really good. But I didn't feel I got as close to them as I did with the Clash. That's the amazing thing about that gig. I really felt that I was, you know, they were very famous, you know, legendary, and yet they were, I could get right up at the front.
Wasn't a really 6 foot stage.
It wasn't. They seemed to be on a level.
On the same level.
Maybe
as
just
you.
A small podium kind of thing.
And I've seen early gigs from probably 77 that came out. Remember, 2-3 Christmas ago, some Clash video got released. Well, it probably wasn't VHS, probably film.
Yeah.
And Shane McGann was actually in the audience. It got released on BBC. They really played stageless type of pubs and venues, and they really interacted with the crowd. There was a lot of chat on them.
I think there was. But as I say in the book, the ironic thing about it was that the hall is like, there's this like punk rock gig going on, and there's like booming, and you think is the ceiling's going to collapse at any minute, you know, because it's you don't normally have a gig in a hall like that.
Is it one of those lecture halls or exam halls that's very looks like something out of the Harry Potter? Is it one of them?
Almost like yeah.
It's a big library kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, it's got very, it's a very high ceiling, and it's got, you know, stucco on the ceiling and statues. It's the most inappropriate place for a gig by The Clash, which again is one of the reasons why I remember it so much.
And was there ever a bootleg of it? You know, in those days people make cassettes,
yeah,
bootlegs.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know. No.
Yeah.
But I was studying languages at Trinity, and in the first year when I arrived, there was virtually nothing happening at all on the Dublin scene. It was like a sort of jazz rock band. I've forgotten the name of them now. They were about the only band. And then suddenly in 1977, there was a huge explosion because of the punk.
Yeah.
And suddenly there were lots of bands. Everybody was talking about music. Everybody you know was either wanted to be in a band or was actually in a band. Or it might be a band that didn't actually exist. They'll say, well, I'm in a band. Well, have you done any gigs yet? Well, no. It's a kind of a concept band. We don't actually play yet.
And did you get involved yourself in any bands over the years?
I did. And my name is there. My name is on the... there's a website which lists the bands of the, I think, 80s and 90s.
Yeah, I've seen
and it's called
yeah.
The Sinners. I was in The Sinners.
Wow.
And I was with them for maybe a year, less than a year.
What sort of stuff?
Well, you couldn't agree. Say it was kind of a mishmash of stuff. It wasn't really, would not really developed a sound. But it was. I left because I didn't want to leave university because I had to finish my degree. So that ties you down, you know. Yeah. Then I went abroad for a year. I went to Germany. So I left The Sinners. I almost joined another band called the Vipers.
Oh, the Vipers, sir.
With Paul Boyle.
Yes.
I thought they were really good. I went to all their gigs and I knew all their songs.
Did they play the TV club and...
Yeah. I think so, yeah. And so I went for an audition and they were amazed because I knew all the songs. I just stepped up and then I knew every single song and knew exactly what to do. Bass. Well, I play bass and rhythm, some lead, keyboards. You know, I do... And they offered me a place, and I said, no, I can't, because I can't leave college. I just can't. I've got to finish my...
Would they have been given semi-professional? Like, would they
I think so, yeah. But no, I've come over from the UK, and I've got a grant. If I leave, then I throw everything up, and I'm never going to be able to do it again. So I thought, I'm not going to do it. And they were just about to leave to go to London. And I remember listening to them playing a... on the John Peel show. They did an appearance on the John Peel show, and I was thinking, well, that could be me, and I recorded it on a cassette.
Could have made it. Yeah.
But then about 6 months later I bumped into the drummer on Griffith Avenue and he told me they'd split up.
Nothing,
they're not, you know, for whatever reason they'd split up, and then they're all back in Dublin again. So I'm glad I didn't join them.
I
remember seeing the Virgin Prunes. They mentioned the Virgin Prunes. I went to see them loads of times. U2, I saw them before there in 78, Project Art Centre.
Before they made it big.
Yeah.
Were they called the Hype Band then?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. But I remember them being as U2.
Yeah.
So, very vivid memory of seeing them on stage. And they were like full of energy, but I thought they were kind of a bit chaotic, really. A lot of energy, and it wasn't being channeled properly. That's how I felt at the time.
Yeah. They were dancing more than putting the energy into their music.
There was a lot of energy in the music, but it was like they weren't together.
Yeah.
But there was certainly something there, and I thought, this is my famous. I tell everybody this story, that I just didn't think that the guy who was the lead vocalist was a very good. I didn't think his voice was very good. I said, I don't think they're going to get anywhere. I rehearsed. There was a rehearsal with a guy called John Breen, who apparently went to the States.
John Breen.
John Breen.
Breen.
And that's, I remember saying it to him, because he ran a rehearsal room on Mountjoy Square where we did some rehearsals, and you two rehearsed there for a while as well.
Yeah. And where were the venues then? Bag It In? Was that
yeah,
the
Bag It In, the Magnet Pier Street. And I remember the band I was in, The Sinners, played at the Magnet Pier Street.
Actually, is that a bar or
just a pub?
Just a pub, yeah.
Yeah. And I saw I was just walking down there this evening, actually, on the south side of St. Stephen's Green. There was a venue, maybe it was a church or something, a hall, concert hall. I remember seeing the Virgin Prunes playing there.
In a hall on,
yeah.
On the green.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And then there was McGonagall's. I saw the Virgin Prunes there.
Yeah.
Is that still there today?
No, it's gone since, I'd say it's gone 5 years now. They,
all right, yeah.
They go there for probably apartments or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I saw the Damned play at McGonagall's. And again, it was like they were famous, and yet there were not many people there. And I was right in front of them.
And how did, like, obviously there wasn't Facebook and internet then. People, where was word of mouth? Fanzines in the record shops?
Fanzines and fanzines, the hot press, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just seeing posters. Yeah, just posters on the, you know, on the notice board, yeah.
On the derelict.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hoardings that we used to see.
Or maybe even in Trinity. Although, the Trinity are very restrictive about putting fly posters for bands in Trinity. But other places. You just got to hear about them. You would just be, there was a scene, and so you knew lots of people, and then the word would spread around.
Yeah. And the record shops then, Freebird?
I didn't go to record shops very much. I remember Dandelion Market.
Dandelion.
Yeah.
And would there be gigs in Dandelion?
I think there were. I think I remember U2 doing lunchtime gigs at Dandelion Market. And I actually recorded U2 doing a lunchtime gig. I've never actually... It's still there in my drawer somewhere. I recorded U2 in 1979. They did two songs, In Your Hand, and I think it's I Will Follow. And I've been saying I must share it sometime. I've not done it yet.
Yeah. Well, there's loads of ways to do it nowadays on the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
Very simply. It's probably on Reel to Reel, or would it be...
No, I just recorded it on a cassette that I just had a beatbox I used to carry around with me at the time. So that's what I recorded the Virgin Prunes on, is this big beatbox. Because it was before the Walkman, you know, it's before the miniaturised tape recorders.
But it wasn't a top loader where you had to do the two buttons.
Kind of like that, yeah.
Kind of like
yeah,
that,
yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. So that's why I've got this recording of U2, and I had some of the Virgin Prunes, but I'm not sure if I've still got those. But
because it was a scene where people did, two or three people would go to gigs in Dublin with recorders and mics. Hey, Tommy, how's it going? And they'd record gigs, and by the gig might be on Friday night, by Saturday afternoon, on O'Connell Bridge, there'd be a box of cassettes, and you can get whatever gig was on.
Oh, yeah.
And
through the desk.
Yeah, sometimes through the desk.
Sometimes,
you'd hear the crowd. You know, you'd lose the atmosphere through the desk sometimes as well. That's
when they had a video of the culture shop playing with the doors on. Loads of mics and everything. Yeah. Perfect sound. No, it's really weird.
Yeah. Well, listen, thanks for sharing your memories, and I look forward to reading the book. Mm-hmm. I've got it, but I haven't just had a chance to read it.
Yeah, I've not seen it yet. So.
Do dig out that tape. Check out Radioactive International.
Yeah.
We're not a station that kind of plays you to normally, but a scoop like that wouldn't be a bad one to pass on and get to an audience pretty quick, you know?
Okay,
an old tape.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Well, listen, thanks again.
Yeah,
enjoy
okay.
The rest of your evening.
Nice to meet you, yeah. Okay.
We have Tommy Rash is back from Australia.
Shouldn't have sat here.
They're locked in. Yeah, this is kind of live. I'm just wabbling away now. And
do you think there's anyone listening?
I don't know. We'll have a listen in now later on. See what the figures were like, you know. It doesn't matter. It all gets recorded, as you know, and it's up there forevermore.
That's like the NSA.
The NSA? Yeah, I'm sure they're listening in, you know. I think I'd love to get out more. I only get out about, I'd say, six times a year to live events like this, to do live broadcasts and archiving things like this. You did one up in, it wasn't live, I don't think, but you taped it. The Upstarts, Angelic Upstarts.
Oh,
you got
sound recorded
off. Yeah.
And, I forgot about that, yeah.
Thanks again. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got loads of those. I've got a good amount of those live recordings.
Yeah, Aiden, or this guy, yeah. Yeah, you sit down there. Yeah.
You should interview Aiden.
You jump out. I'll get Tommy later, yeah. Aiden, get in there. Oh yeah, good man. Just checking our levels and all that.
Is this one of the old band members?
No, I wasn't in a band. Never. Never claimed
you're
to.
You're lucky. You're lucky.
Yeah.
We go back a long time.
We do. Aidan was on the radio back in 92. When we ran it as a FM pirate in Dublin.
That's right. Remember that.
What was it called?
Radioactive 101 FM.
Oh, even then it was radioactive.
Yeah, it was always called.
I was pretty clever. I hope it's not live now, yeah?
Yeah, we're live here now,
I've been pretty clever. No one used to do it, David.
No.
I record all my radio programs every night. The ones I did every night. And I shouldn't have them all.
Yeah, but I remember in those days you used to record all your phone calls too.
I did, but I don't do that anymore now, but I used to do it many years ago.
Where are those tapes?
I took a holiday, I had them somewhere packed away, you know that?
Yeah. Aidan was a bit of a technical head then. He was the only guy I knew who had like foreign satellites pointing at different satellites in the sky.
I tell you why, it was my younger days, I was before my time.
Aidan's always been a technical head.
Yeah.
You still are. He was always into computers and mobile phones before, you know, he always knew the latest. And
I remember Tom and Radioactive. He used to give out to me at meetings. I used to bring the band in, leave the doors right open. And we never caught anyone. We got away with it. Remember all that?
Yeah, yeah.
Great fun.
Yeah.
Where was Radioactive?
I can't tell you that.
No, it's all right. Nowadays we can say. Top of North Great George Street for the first 10 months, and then we moved Stony Batter for a while.
That's right. And then we went to Gardner Street then.
Then we went Sherrard Street, opposite the SFX.
St. Francis Chamber.
Yeah, opposite the SFX.
It used to be great because the guards used to come around. They could never find where we were. The bands used to come into me every time, bring gear in and everything. I've got away with more though over the years. But we wouldn't get away with
that.
Don't
say that on radio now.
Over the years, I wouldn't get away with that now, of course.
It's all, anyone can broadcast now. Any kid can take their phone and broadcast to the world. And they can do video, TV, live stream. Technology has given them this thing. But you'll find that 90% of the things they do are sharing funny football goals or cats doing funny things. Rather than putting their musical or political or social ideas together to make their lives better. They're just buying into the...
I
had great bands in my time. Lord of bands.
Name them.
I can't do that. But I might
no, you can do it now. It's okay.
But I couldn't. Because the Lords were different.
I'm a long man, Ed. You're okay. You can do it now.
I know that. But I had a lot of famous bands.
Okay, who?
I used to call myself the late radio program. Had lots of bands on it. But I won't give them any of the names. Unless they give me the okay in writing, then I would. I'm learning there, yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But how I got a famous record gave I good. You put your right foot in, your right foot out, your right foot in, and you take it all about. You do the hacky cocky. You turn the back. That's what it's all about. Oh, the cocky cocky cocky. Oh, the cocky cocky. Oh, the cocky cocky. That's what it's all about.
Can I ask you one question, Aidan?
Hi, David.
Okay, Niall said there was going to be a reunion gig.
You never
Aidan
know.
Walsh.
There might be one. There might be.
He said Aidan Walsh and the Screaming Eagles.
Huey
on the drums.
Okay.
What do you have to say to that?
Before you had to get Huey again, now he retired from the drum days.
He's teaching drums.
Not bad,
he's
David.
He's gigging every weekend. Bands.
Well, I believe you have a new band now.
Yes.
What do you call them?
Hooligan.
Where did you come from?
You did a gig with us in Temple Lane.
That was many years ago, younger then.
Do you remember?
Hooligan.
That's right, yeah. You got that gig?
Oh, wait. Can I get a copy of this on the radio? Can I get a copy of this on the radio?
Oh, yeah, this will all be archived forevermore.
Can we hear this tonight?
It's live
streaming.
It's more likely I get home. I'll be up in the morning.
Okay.
Like 10
now,
so, what was your best gig ever,
Nathan? The Hooligans were a great band. The Screaming Eagles, Gone with the Wind, and a Happy New Year.
What about Golden Horse?
Oh, the Golden Horse were a great time together. A great band. Cameron Calmy, Gavin Fried, and all them.
Goggy.
And
did you ever see you too?
Who were they?
Or the Baby Snakes.
Oh, Baby Snakes. I remember them. I remember Bono was a great band. He's still more famous to me than ever.
Okay.
He beat me.
Paddy Dunning?
Paddy's a great man. I hope he keep up the good work, what he's doing
will
now.
He organised a reunion gig.
Oh, he did. And well done for Paddy. We'll remember Paddy for many, many years to come.
Are you going to go for it? Come on.
I might do one, but I don't lose my benefits.
You
have to be
lose
careful.
Your benefits if it's a once-off.
Go under a different name.
I can't do that. Then I'm going on live on air at the moment. Yeah. I'm live at the moment on air.
I promise you, Aidan, if you lose your benefits for 1 week, I'll indemnify you.
But if I lose it for good, David, you'd spend it with me then, would you?
You won't lose it for good.
But if I did, okay. David. Welcome to rock and roll.
I know certain bands in this town who are on the dole that play gigs on a regular basis.
Well, you cannot lie, you can't give them any of the name, because they lose all the benefits if you did that.
James Lobb had a healthy level of paranoia.
I always do my homework. You do your homework. A band should have a foundation work.
What's the most important piece of homework that a band can do?
They have to get trademarked on if they want to keep the name.
Right. I have got my trademark. What else do I do?
They need a logo.
I have that.
If you have a logo, a trademark, and a name, then for all company.
I've got Paul Lambert did my trademark.
Good move.
I've got a very good logo.
You get a company and a logo together, it's very powerful.
Okay.
All together. But if you don't do it all together, they can take the name off you. You only get a trademark for the logo, you have no rights to the name. But for all the company and get a trademark done, then you have the rights to the board.
The best recording studio in Ireland.
Paddy Dunham was very good. I had a great time working with Paddy over the years.
Is he going to do us a discount?
I hope he will. Because I wouldn't have Paddy's money, but I do have his brains.
Yeah, but we could go down there and we could stay a few nights.
Oh yeah, I like that. And Paddy, I have a great family. Claire and all the family is very good. Daughters, family, the whole lot. I remember them for many years to come.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for Paddy, I wouldn't be here today.
Do you remember the Christmas party?
I had a great time.
Good.
Doing nothing. Had to be careful there.
What about
that.
The pizza? Do you remember the pizza?
Oh, that was a good night. Don't bring that one up. You might think I came from a different planet, David.
Okay, Happy New Year, David.
Happy New Year! Happy New Year!
You're with Hooligan.
Yeah,
Hooligan, they're a good band.
I'm a singer and guitarist.
And you were just back from a tour of Germany, was it?
When we played in Oaks. I can't remember, but we could have been.
Yeah. Have you got flash on it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. We broke 10 ribs.
Again.
Yeah. Listen, thanks, Aidan.
Oh, thank you. And there, David, get in there, David.
Okay. This is going to be in the front of the papers, Aidan.
Yeah.
You keep up the good work.
Thanks, Aidan.
And hope you do well for many years to come.
Okay, Aidan, a coffee and a cake, okay?
And I couldn't name them bands. If I did, I could be liable for later on.
You could be sued.
Now you have it. But if they pass away, I get away with it then.
Okay.
But a lot of bands are hitting the big times at the moment. And hope they do well for many years to come.
Right.
I hope you keep the radio active for many years to come.
Yeah.
You remember the good days?
You remember, Aidan, Elvis is gone and you're taking
Elvis
over.
Elvis gone, I took over.
What happened to Gabe Byrne, the late?
Gabe Byrne, he retired, he got old.
Ryan Tuberty.
He's a good man, I hope he do well.
What happened to Jerry Ryan?
Trey Ryan's a great man, it wasn't for Trey Ryan.
A good friend to you.
He kept my name alive
Jay
on the radio.
And
Dave Fanning. They kept my name alive for many, many years to come. I won't forget that. I hope that's going out okay. Can you get the detail enough?
That's detail, yeah.
Well done, Aidan. Well
Thanks
done.
Again.
Thank you.
Yeah. Cheers.
Don't leave anything happen that tape.
No. That's already on the internet.
Yeah. Aidan, before you put on air tomorrow, make sure there's no bad words on it.
I'll just bleep out your bits that you
I
didn't
don't
say
mind
any
that.
Bad words.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay,
you're
I might take you up on that.
He's
group.
A professional.
I know that. Yeah. Well
I'll
done.
Take you up on that gig, Aidan.
You're professional. You don't get paid, though.
That's I know that. I know
you don't
that.
Get paid, right?
I don't get money.
Is that why you left the rock and roll game?
I had to give it up because I got ill.
You got benefits.
No, I got very ill.
Okay.
But
sorry,
I won't.
Dear.
I won't die yet. But I hope to live for many years to come.
You're still pitching.
I have a lot to thank Paddy and Jerry Ryan
and
Eamon Carr. Oh, I forgot about Eamon Carr. If it wasn't for me, Eamon Carr is a great man. He kept my work alive for many years. I won't forget what he did for me over the years. He's a great guy to know. I hope you remember him for many years to come. Remember the name of the band, Eamon Carr band? What's the name of the band?
Awesome.
Oh, they're a great band. What are they doing now?
Happy New Year.
took a holiday.
No, they did a reunion gig.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
But Aim Card didn't. But yeah,
that's
but
what we'll talk about.
Well, remember that? But Aim Card didn't play with him at that gig. Remember that?
Aidan Walsh, Tree Arena.
Yep.
What?
I can see it, Tree Arena.
Yeah.
Golden Horde before.
Well,
everything.
The Golden Factory.
Oh yeah. There's another band as well, Paranoid Vision. Don't forget them. They're a great band.
They're here tonight.
Are they a good guy? Are they a great guy?
No, do you remember they pulled out on the night?
I think that guy was right because he was afraid that his throat was hurting him at the time. He did a major gig beforehand. Might be lucky. But don't forget Michael. Michael used to be a great person many years ago. Remember Michael, who did the book? He kept me alive. And Niall. If it wasn't for Niall and Michael, I wouldn't be alive in this book now. I owe him a lot for that. And you too. I keep forgetting your name.
Donald.
We go back many years.
They didn't know my name in the old days.
No. I had problems. Yeah, different name.
Radio handle of the names, you know.
Are you glad you came down, Aidan?
I'm happy I came. Now I have to go back to my planet now.
Okay. We'll talk about that game.
I will. No problem. Over and out.
Good night.
Good night.
See you then.
Make sure I get a copy of all that.
Yeah.
Well done, David.
Always a pleasure.
Great.
So did you get a piece in the book?
Yeah.
Yeah, what did you go for?
Bands.
Yeah, which
band
did you?
I went for the first gig I was ever at. It was Rocky De Valera and the Gravediggers and the Don Lamarck and Don
Lamarck. Yeah, kind of Saturday afternoon gig.
Yeah.
Like, would you pay into that?
No, I bumped in through a hole in the wall.
Would have been a paid in gig, yeah.
About 50p, I think.
Yeah.
I was 10 years old, so I squeezed in through a gap in the side of the wall, didn't he?
Yeah. And he was the headliner?
Yeah, he was the band playing, yeah.
Yeah.
It was the first gig I was ever at in my life.
And
I didn't even know what... Well, I knew what music was from Top
radio
of the Pops.
And, yeah,
and the radio.
TV.
Never been at a gig in my life.
Rocky De Valera, the name rings a bell.
Ferdia McKenna, he's a journalist.
Yeah.
So he has a piece in the book as well. Just happened to be that band. It could have been another Saturday. Would have been another band. Different Saturday might have been you too.
And was it because it was your first?
Because it was my first.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a thrill, just the buzz of being in the audience and looking around and seeing lots of young people and the feeling that it was slightly.
You're talking 82,
79.
79.
Yeah. So you two would have been playing there. I think they did about between 6 or 8 gigs in Dandenong. So this just happened to me. I used to go in there every Saturday to hang around.
And that was record stores and...
Yeah, badges and...
Get your nose pierced through you.
No, nobody in those days got their nose pierced. That was early 80s that came
80s,
in.
Okay.
Yeah. It was very different than those days.
Everyone dressed up, like, kind of...
Well, people did dress up, but you had lots of... kind of arty new wave, like there was punk and there was new wave, and Bono and people like that would have been more new wave, you know, trousers with stripes down them and stuff, as opposed to bondage trousers that punks were on. But bondage trousers were so expensive that the odd person used to buy a pair in England, but nobody could afford a pair.
Was there a DIY punk scene then?
No, there wasn't.
They were trying to copy the fashion of London.
Trying to copy the fashion, just looking at photos and trying your best to copy the fashion, which ended up being DIY, because you didn't have those shops over here. There's one shop, No Romance, that sold punk gear, but it was so expensive that you just ended up doing your own thing. So on a couple of zips.
What other bands do you remember from that era, 78, 79?
Well, I remember the Outcasts.
The Outcasts came down.
Yeah.
Was that the Pier Street gig, was it? Or
no, that was the Dandenong Market. They were the talk of the punk scene. The people who were really into punk as opposed to New Wave.
Yeah. And I believe there was negativity from some sections towards...
Oh, yeah, no, it was incredibly negative. Like, the whole... If you were a punk in those days... Like, walking to your bus stop up to the Dandenong Market, I mean, it was just sheer hostility all the way.
From Boot Boys, Skins?
It was, yeah, you'd get it. The Boot Boys, Skins wanted to beat you up, and then the straight people were afraid of you.
Yeah.
The odd Boot Boy might be afraid of you as well, because they just didn't know how to place you. Yeah. I mean, in Ireland those days, it was... I ran away lots of times, but and I was in loads of confrontations, but I never got a serious beating, no.
I only got that up once in Dublin.
also J.J. Smith on the way back from a Sinead O'Connor gig, talking 87, 88,
yeah.
Got beaten up.
Well, you talk your way out of it, or you look at the ground, yeah. Or you know, it's always, I always found that the suburbs were more dangerous than the city, because at least in the city there was a lot of people like you. You were given a bit of leeway.
There's anonymity in there. And
yeah, exactly. But when you were down the local chipper on a Saturday night, there's nowhere to hide. You know,
yeah.
Nowhere to run. Yeah, like you stand out like a sore thumb. Much more dangerous.
Yeah. And when did you start playing? When did you get into
The first band I had was in 1987. So it took me a while. Like,
what were they called?
The name wasn't great. It was called Power Storm. We played one gig. But it was memorable. Yeah, we played one gig and then the singer went to England. But it's memorable because the singer at the time, he died about 25 years ago, but he was one of the punks from town. He was a bit of a hero of mine, so to be in the same band as him and we wrote a couple of songs, it's like kind of set me off from my path of playing music. And yeah,
where would you got gigs?
Well, the one and only gig we played was in the Dame Tavern in Dame Lane upstairs. So yeah, no, we were the first band. There were three bands playing, and we played about five songs. And
did you know who else played that night?
Yeah, there was a band called Search and Destroy.
Oh yeah, I remember seeing them in CIE Hall.
Yeah, Sid was the guitarist, a brother of Dez who was in the Golden Hordes. Hugh, their younger brother, was the drummer in my band, and we played in Aidan's band as well. And then a guy called Anto on vocals. Johnny Bonney was the drummer. He's in the Radiators now. So you get the same crowd of musicians,
moving around
the place.
Yeah. And who's gigging? Obviously, you're gigging yourselves. Who's gigging today in Dublin that you've noticed? Any new bands coming through that should be?
Yeah, I saw a great band on Saturday night in Fibber McGee's called Crocodile with a K.
Dublin band.
Yeah. Hardcore type punk. Yeah. Excellent band, I was very impressed.
Bob is looking for new bands.
Yeah, no, Crocodile was very impressed. They used to be, the singer used to be in a band called SFU, another hardcore band.
I think I've seen them.
You might have seen them, yeah.
In Fibbers.
Yeah.
How did you get the gig in Hope? The venue was strange.
That's good. Yeah. The lads in my band, Hooligan, the bass player is from Baldoyle, but his family are from Hope. So he talked a pub owner into putting on the gig.
So he knew the owners of the venue, wasn't he?
Yeah, he knew them, like, from going in there and all that kind of thing.
It was bizarre to see.
Yeah, I'd say it was.
Henry and Jim
sit
there in Hope. Free gig it was as well.
Yeah, I know. It was good, all right. I was in a bit of a strange headspace that day because I just scattered both of my parents' ashes. So I was kind of on a different wavelength, but everyone says what a great gig, it was a great night, we should do it again sometime. When you're doing a gig, you just focus on what's in front of you, but it's kind of a bit all over the place. We recorded five new songs in September, and we're still working on a release date. We have a record label in the States called Oi the Boat Records. It's the same as do you know the Laird Ferguson's band, the Old Friend Casuals?
Yeah.
They're on that label as well.
Laird's from Rancid. So will you get to tour up there, or is that
hopefully it's just the lads, we all work, so it's hard to get to go to the States. We went to the States a couple of years ago and we did a tour of the West Coast, which was amazing, but I remember when I came back, I had to sell my car, that's such a... It's not really a money maker, it's more...
The bills and, I've missed you a million times. You play Bose a lot.
We played there once, but...
Maybe I got you drunk there. Yeah. I saw you on the Bose with all these guys playing
We played there once, but we'd love to play there again.
Yeah, I have to get down and see
you. And we're playing in Fibbers on the 8th of April.
And anyone else on the bill that night?
There might be Takers and Users, which are a great new Oi band from Belfast, and United Bottles, that are ex-Running Riot.
Yeah.
The Colin there, the singer, died a couple of years ago, so the rest of the lads have a really good band called United Bottles. Yeah, that's to be confirmed, the lineup, but hopefully that's what we're working on.
One of their first gigs down here?
No, they played in Fibbers about a month before Christmas. Right. We were on the bill as well. Excellent band, really good band. Downstairs in Fibbers.
Downstairs, that's in the
basement. Yeah.
The basement, yeah. This is brilliant. And is it hard to get? Is it hard to get venues? Has that ever changed?
Well, I mean, the host one was an exception. It isn't hard to get a gig. The thing is, if you play somewhere where they don't put on punk gigs, it's hard to get a crowd.
Yeah.
So we play a lot in Thomas House. We play a lot in Fibbers. Yeah. And if you go outside that, you might end up playing to 10 people or something. So
yeah, you need to go where there's going to be.
Yeah, those people have people who are into that style of music, so there's a bit of a natural audience there, you know.
It's not as bad as it used to be. Like, people say you can't get a gig, but there is still.
No, it's not as bad. Like, I think years ago you couldn't even get a gig.
Yeah.
You know, it was very hard to talk anyone around to putting on a punk band, but it's just the apathy out there, you know. There's just so much. People have more choice now. They're not really. Like, years ago, to go to a gig, you'd nearly mark it on your calendar a couple of months ahead. It was like a big event that you'd really look forward to. But that sense of excitement, it's not really there anymore, unfortunately, you know.
Yeah. Any big gigs coming up? Any big bands in the UK coming up?
Yeah, I was talking to Peter from Paranoid Visions, and Discharge are coming soon to the Voodoo Lounge. The Roots played there about a week ago. That was a brilliant gig. That was an excellent gig, yeah. First time.
Full house.
It was the first time I saw them up close. I saw them in Rebellion, but it was great to see them in a smaller venue. And that's all I can think of now, but.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, no,
thanks for having me. Good to meet you. Yeah, and I'll give you a sticker here.
Yeah,
just has the URL on it. Hopefully by 10, 11 o'clock tomorrow morning I'll have it up in archive mode. This is live now. Probably going to sign off and leave the room. Hopefully
nice meeting, Donald.
We'll see you again at a gig.
Good to know you're at the whole gig. I was wondering who was at that gig.
Yeah, it was strange.
I'm going to cut off. See you then. Okay.
Turn this off and we can...
Because we were saying actually...